The Tamar Yonah Show.
This show is going to concentrate on why. Why are we here? This is basically an introduction to Kabbalah show. The mysteries of life and the tapestry of the soul. A show dealing with Jewish mysticism. I'm holding a book in my hand. It's just out. It's called A Tapestry for the Soul, The Introduction to the Zohar by Rabbi Yehuda Lev Ashlag. And unfortunately, Rabbi Yehuda Lev Ashlag isn't in this world anymore. He went, passed over to the other side several years ago. But here to translate his work and to give his own sidebar explanations to the Kabbalah, we have the author of this book called A Tapestry for the Soul, which is Yedida Cohen, who lives up in Tzfat, Israel. Tzfat, for anyone who doesn't know, is a very mystical city. A lot of very mystical people who are into that live in Tzfat. It's a very, very holy city. And she lives there as well. And she, again, translated these works. And you can go to her website and check it out and check out the other books that she's translated there by Rabbi Ashlag, like In the Shadow of the Ladder, at NahoraPress.com. NahoraPress.com. Welcome to the show, Yedida Cohen.
Hi, Tamar, and welcome to everybody. It's wonderful to be back with you.
Yes, it is. Very nice to have you. If anyone remembers way back when I used to do the Eshet Chayil show before I handed it over to Malka Fleischer, I used to have you on as a little, you know, Kabbalah piece for like, I don't know, a little few minutes every week. And it was lovely to have you on to try to explain, to help us understand the mysteries of life. Because if you don't know why you're put on this earth, if you don't know what your purpose is, if you don't know that God actually loves us and doesn't want to see us miserable, then it will be able to change your life and put it on a better course. So why don't we start from there? The introduction to the Kabbalah. What is the Kabbalah? Why do we have it? And what is the purpose for it and for life? Wow, can we do that in about an hour?
Well, I guess we could. I mean, we could certainly have a try. Rabbi Ashlag, I think it was just amazing in his approach to Jewish mysticism and to the Kabbalah, because he didn't concentrate on you know, very high stuff. I mean, he does in his commentary to the Zohar, but he also wrote these incredible introductions, and these introductions really pull out the principles which underlie the Zohar and the more esoteric works, and he explains exactly what you said. Why are we here? What are we? His very first question is, what is my essence? What is our essence? And what are we? Actually, you know, what are we? And this is a question which, if you really want to go into it, can take you so far. Am I my body? Am I my personality? Am I my relationships? What am I? And we see that all these things move and change as we grow, but there's something within us, which is really us. And he goes on to say that our essence is something which is actually unknowable, in the sense that we can't know it through our senses. And the same way that we can't know God, we can't know our own inner self. And that's because our own inner self is in fact part of God. And it's what we would call the soul. It's what we call the soul. And the soul is not actually accessible by our senses, but we do know it's there because it's got actions, just like God's got actions. We can't physically see God, but we know that God exists because of the actions. And so that's how the soul reveals itself, is through its actions. So you could ask, what are the actions of the soul? And intuition, creativity, full conscience. So many people receive messages from their soul in so many different ways. And this is how he begins his whole explanation. What are we? What are we really? And I think this is just fascinating, because I think it opens up so many vistas.
You know, a lot of people today, especially in Western society, where, you know, people have gone to shrinks and they're trying to discover, why am I doing this and who am I? Is that as important to know, and is it even possible to know, or should we just be concentrating on what I know of myself, I'm going to work on, and my objective is not to know, you know, to get in touch with myself and find myself, but rather to be a servant of God and do what God wants me to do, and in that way I'll be developing the real me. Where does all this come in?
Well, that's very interesting, because different people work at different levels. And for some people, it's really, like you said, it's not so important. And this is why the rabbis put a restriction on the learning of Kabbalah. Because if a person wants to learn Kabbalah just in order to complete his general education or something like that, it doesn't really speak with him, but he knows it's part of Judaism. Then they said, wait till you're 40, you should be married, preferably male, and that was the limit. But there are other people who these questions really burn for them, and who they really, really, really feel that it's something they need to work with. And for those people, the Kabbalah is available at any age, and that was according also to Rav Cook as well, not just Rabbi Ashlag.
Well, when you're talking about Kabbalah, let's make a distinction here, because when you're talking about understanding basics of the soul and the different parts of the soul and the different purposes of the different spiritual rungs and the ladder, this is information that can help everybody. But you're not talking about what's good for everybody is learning the secrets of Kabbalah. In other words, you know, there's a lot, I mean, you can really go deep into Kabbalah, which is very dangerous, and that's not what you're talking about. This is an introduction in order to help people understand things to help improve and guide their lives and attach themselves more to the oneness of the universe, which is God, and not these, you know, this higher level of Kabbalah. We're not talking about teaching those things which should only be learned by people who are on a special level.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. In fact, Rabbi Ashlag discusses this in one of his introductions. There's two parts to the Kabbalah. One is called the Sodot of the Kabbalah, and the other one is called the Ta'ameh mitzvot. And the higher level, the Sodot, is actually not meant to be taught except between a rabbi and his pupil. The Ta'ameh of the Kabbalah is the reasons, and this is in fact available. And he said that the great Kabbalists, in fact, knew the difference, and they did not write the Sodot down. So, in fact, if you pick up a book of Kabbalah written by a proper authority, a proper tzaddik, like the Ramchal or Rabbi Ashlag, Rav Cook, you can be quite confident that whatever you read is in the realm that is permitted for everybody and encouraged for everybody, because we definitely get a deeper understanding of Judaism and of ourselves through it. The Sodot, which are hidden, was not written down at all by these great rabbis, because they definitely understood the difference. And of course, they knew that once a book is written, there's no control over it. You can't put it in the bookstore and say you can buy it and you can't. Once it's on the bookshelf, it's open to everybody. So they did not commit to writing the Sodot, which are not suitable for people.
Okay. So I'm holding again in my hand your book that you just came out, which is basically a translation of Rav Yehuda Lev Ashlag's writings. And in your book, I want to make this clear to people, this is not Yedida telling you her interpretation of Kabbalah. This is not, you know, a Kabbalah 101 course that they're giving in New York and in some Kabbalah center. This is pure Rabbi Ashlag work that you have translated only and used his commentaries alongside the translations to help guide people into understanding exactly what he's writing. So there's really no editing here at all. It's just translation and a compilation of his works together, put together for people to study from. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. I took the introduction to the Zohar, which was one of the translations that my husband and I did in the Shadow of the Ladder. And after that was published, a lot of people wrote to us and said, could we have more? And it made me think a little bit, what does more mean? Does more mean more in quantity or going deeper? And one of the issues of Rabbi Ashlag's writings is that he writes in a very, very condensed way. His sentences contain so much information. A paragraph takes you all day to understand it. And people were having difficulty in understanding the concepts because there's hardly any explanation in the introduction to the Zohar itself. And I thought to myself, well, who's the best teacher? And of course the best teacher was Rabbi Ashlag himself. There's nobody better. But his explanations, where he sort of undoes these condensed sentences, if you like, and goes deeper in, are scattered all over his very many writings. And I realized that the best way to enable people to go in and understand it more clearly what he's saying is to actually find those explanations and put them alongside each idea so that Rabbi Ashlag himself is teaching his own ideas. And I think that's very important because the tzaddik, the righteous one, the enlightened one, whatever you want to call him, has a perception of the higher worlds and also of this world that is very, very different from that of an ordinary person. So if we can learn and touch his perception directly, we're going to get something which you can't get if an ordinary person like myself was to stand as an agent or an intermediary and explain instead of him. So having that direct connection with Rabbi Ashlag, I felt was very, very important.
Okay, so if somebody reads this book and reads Rav Ashlag's works here on the Zohar, on Kabbalah, what are they going to come away with?
Oh, wow. That is just, you know, it's just an amazing question. I've seen so many people come away with so much. They come away with a better self-esteem. That's the first thing. One of the major problems of this generation, of all over the West, is our own lack of self-esteem. We're taught from when we're very young, you should do better, you're not good enough, you should do this, you should do that. And we don't really realize that in actual fact, the human being is the pinnacle of God's creation. And that as God's creation, we have so much potential and we are beloved and we are so able. And that's the very first thing, and that God wants us and loves us and wants to do good to us. And to actually really take that in and is the very first step. And I see people just get that wonderful sigh of relief that they are good just the way they are. And the moment we really accept ourselves, that's the moment then we're able to make changes. We can't really make those changes until we really, first of all, accept that who we really are and accept our wonderful potential. So I think the very first thing that I see in people is a change in their self-esteem. Their self-esteem goes up.
So when you say that we need to accept ourselves and then you say we need to change ourselves, it's kind of funny. So how do you explain that? What is Rav Ashlag saying in that accepting you can then change yourself?
Okay, that's a very fascinating question. Well, it basically goes back, if you like, to what we really are. And what we really are is a vessel for God's light. Now, that sounds a bit etheric, so I'll explain. The highest level at which the tzaddik can even think about God at all is called the Ein Sof, the infinite. And the Ein Sof is basically God's light. And God's light is his goodness, his joy, his love, the word light covers all of that. And that light is the force of creation. It wants to give goodness to the creatures. And therefore it created a will to receive all that light. And that will to receive is the essence of every created being. And so therefore, because we are created beings, we have within us a will to receive. We have within us a vessel for God's light. Now, there is a catch to that, and that is that we also can use that vessel to receive just for ourselves alone, and that's called the ego. When we receive for ourselves alone, we're cut off from that light because we're just thinking about ourselves. We're just trying to bolster up ourselves, just and without any relationship to the light that's coming, without any relationship to giving, without any relationship to anything else other than ourselves. And the moment we do that, we're in separation, because God is giving, and if we're just receiving, that's a separation. We're separated in form. So we have this ego, we have this vessel to receive, and on the one hand, to know, like we said earlier, that it's very precious and very beautiful and that God created it. And on the other hand, to know that we can use it badly and that we can use it to cause separation. And what we then need to do is to change its direction. And that's called litaken, to transform the vessel. And to transform it means that we change its direction, that instead of just receiving for ourselves, we begin to think about receiving with the intention of giving, intention of giving to each other, or the intention of giving to God. As far as God's concerned, that's equivalent. So if we tend to give to each other, that we don't receive for ourselves alone, but we give first, then that's called the tikkun. That's the transformation of the vessel. And that tikkun brings us close to God, because closeness means acting in the same way as. And just as God and God's light is giving, when we become giving, we become like God.
So you're saying that that we have an ego, and that we need to learn to transform ourselves into vessels of that can contain the light of God, and therefore give out light. Light wants to, you know, to emanate. It wants to you know, be out there. And yet we have this ego. So would that be a like, and I'm going to bring this down to a very low level now and say something like, a woman wants to have beautiful things in her home, a beautiful dining room table and chairs and redecorated house. And that's okay as long as she then uses these things, these blessings, to give, to have Shabbat guests over, to host people. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, I mean, like you said, that's just one very small example. Everything that we get, everything comes from God. So, you know, material things, but also emotional, intellectual, everything that we receive comes from God. There's lots of different levels of receiving. And the idea is that we can, you know, get caught up in just like receiving a person. Like you say, a woman could just sort of like get very caught up in the material aspects of things, of just getting things for the sake of getting them, or so that she, you know, her house looks nicer than the neighbor's. Or she could say, well, I need these beautiful things for Shabbat, to welcome the Shabbos bride, to have guests, to have the poor in and give them a good meal. So one can take that very same action of receiving and use it in so many different ways. And the ones which where we're able to give our love and our light and what we've received outwards are the ones which bring us into affinity of form with God. And Rabbi Ashlag puts an enormous emphasis on this. He calls it Hashva'at Hatzura. When we are able to act in a way that is similar to the way God acts, then we actually achieve oneness with God, even if it's just for that moment. Of course, we can lose it again the next moment. But if, the more moments we have of those oneness with God, of giving, of not thinking of ourselves, but transforming that ego into giving, is very, very precious. Now, I mean, you gave a beautiful example, because there are people, for example, who don't care at all about how their houses look. And so, therefore, they don't have a vessel in which they could use beauty in their house for giving. They would have to use something else. So everybody's vessel, in fact, is slightly different. People have different things they feel are important. So if this woman has got a vessel, a desire to make things good, she can use that.
All right. We're talking with Yedidah Cohen, and she's translated the works of Rabbi Ashlag. It's called A Tapestry for the Soul. It's basically an introduction to Kabbalah, Jewish mysticism. When we get back, we'll take your calls if you'd like to call in with any comments or questions. Welcome back to the show, Yedidah.
Thank you.
Yedidah, I wanted to mention a few things that you said in the last segment, because I think it's very important. These are lessons that I've learned in life that have really made a difference for me. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go on to more general topics that people always want to know about, like the purpose of evil and free
sure.
will. But first I want to say something. You were talking about little moments in life, and that, you know, the more we fill our lives with these little moments where we connect with the oneness of God, where we can reflect his light, where we can emanate goodness, and we can do good deeds, random acts of loving kindness. The more moments such as these that we fill our lives with, the more we become, the more this becomes part of our lives. And I just wanted to say, I was once listening to an interview with someone, I don't even remember who it was, but he was a very macho man who had, I think he was brought down by some disease, and he was trying to take daily steps to recover from his disease to be able to, maybe it was MS or something like that, and he wanted to, function in life as best as possible. And he said one of the lessons he learned was that baby steps count. It really does. That
yes.
People think, oh, I have to make big changes in my life. And it's not necessarily true, because yes. baby steps count. Each moment, as you said, these little moments make up who we are and help us, you know, do the things that we want to do. So I just wanted to put that message in and emphasize what you said about little moments in life
oh, yeah.
that baby steps count. Let's talk about that we're put down on this earth. You said we are given an ego, and we're given free will to choose to do good or bad. We have blessings that God has given us. Are we going to use these blessings to emanate light, or are we going to use these blessings as a contraction, to just be a taker in this world and not a giver? Mm. So talk about free will.
Yes. Well, free will is very, very interesting in the work of Rabbi Ashlag, and it doesn't actually act in exactly the way we think. We think that we've got free will to decide, you know, who we're going to marry, where we're going to live, all these kind of things. In actual fact, that's probably not the case. We are very much the vessel, and that God directs our lives. Free will is in a different sphere. Free will is, how do I respond to whatever's happening? Now, the fact is that Rabbi Ashlag teaches us we are all going to get to our perfection. We are all going to make it. We're definitely all going to get there. We're all going to reach, you know, what's called the Gemar HaTikkun, the end of the Tikkun, and we're all going to get to our complete perfection, all of us. Our free will lies in how we're going to do it. Are we going to go through the shorter way, which is the way through Torah and mitzvot, doing conscious good deeds? Or are we going to take the way of suffering? Suffering, unfortunately, is also a path, and many of us unconsciously choose that. We choose unconsciously. It's not a conscious choice. Nobody in the right mind consciously chooses suffering, but it is a choice that the soul makes if we don't choose the path of Torah and mitzvot. And here I'm using the word Torah and mitzvot in its very widest sense, the path of consciousness, the path of conscious choice, the path of consciously doing good. Then unfortunately we do tend to slip into suffering, and that's actually where the free choice lies. that we should choose good, choose to do the conscious way, and that's where free choice lies. Otherwise, we do slip into the unconscious choice, which is the choice of suffering. Because the soul knows, the soul wants to get to God, and the soul's not so concerned about the ego. It's not the same thing, and the soul, it knows it wants to get to God, and if the ego is interfering, then the soul will say, okay, so you're going to learn by experience that just using your ego isn't a good thing. And then the ego starts to suffer, whether it's illness or whether it's financial difficulties or whatever it is. And then by experience, one learns that that's not a good way. And that's the path of suffering. And that's where free choice lies.
How does it work where you say that everybody is going to achieve their tikkun or their fixing, what was the word you used for it? Not fixing, but...
Transformation.
Yes. When you have people like Hitler in the world, like when you have people like Ahmadinejad, when you have terrorists who are chopping off people's heads and doing horrible things.
Dreadful, I know. I mean, what can I tell you? I'm an ordinary human being. I'm not a tzaddik, so... I can only pass on, if you like, the words of the tzaddik. And what he says is that every vessel is, we're all part of that Ein Sof, that original Ein Sof, the infinite of the light and the vessel. And then that vessel comes down and splits into all the different souls. I'm not certain. I've no idea here. I mean, it's a realm of speculation for me because I'm not a tzaddik, so I can't actually see things. But I would imagine that although we can have a human being walking around, he might lose his soul in a way. I mean, I should imagine that's possible. He goes down to such a low level that he no longer has a soul in the same way. That's the only explanation I can give. But like I say, that's my own personal take on that.
All right, let me ask you another question. In a relationship between a man and a woman, and we're talking about a marriage relationship where people have joined their souls together under a canopy, under the chuppah, in a holy way, and is there always a giver and a taker in a relationship, or can you have two givers or two takers?
That's so interesting. Well, in the Kabbalah language, and the language of the Kabbalah is very special, the male side is the giver and the female side is the receiver. But don't get that muddled up into men and women. Both men and women are both. So we have the male is a man, is a receiver, is a female, if you like, with respect to his relationship with God, because he receives the light from God, whereas a woman uses her male side, her giving side, when she gives to her children. So it's everybody has within them both male and female sides to themselves. And of course, male and female sides to themselves, and we swap all the time. We flow. I mean, a woman receives from the man and gives to the children. She's using her female side when she receives from her husband. She's using her male side when she gives to her children or to her friends. And, of course, when she gives to her husband, so male and female in Kabbalah are not men and women. A man has both parts to him, both male and female. A woman has both parts to herself, also male and female. And so, of course, we're made up of all these very, very incredible combinations.
Let me ask you another question. This has to do with free will as well, because, and I'm going to try to explain this in the simplest terms that everybody who doesn't have a background in any type of Jewish mysticism learnings, there is freedom of choice, and in this world, we understand that God is one, His name is one, We're all connected to God. We're all part of this one. And in order to have free will, there has to be an illusion that or a cover-up that God really exists, so we can make decisions to do evil or to do good. If we had God standing in front of us all day long, we wouldn't be able to do evil. So there has to be some type of cloaking or I'm not sure the right word to use to kind of give us an impression that, you know, we have free will, and that way we can make these choices. Where does evil fit into the question here? Because so many different religions teach of a good God in heaven and an evil God in hell called the devil, and he's fighting for these souls, and he is evil, and it's not monotheism where you have a good God and a bad God. There is only one God. There is no devil. There is an angel called the Satan, which in English is called Satan, but he is certainly not a devil that is trying to steal souls from God. Rather, the angel called the Satan in Judaism is an angel that is doing the will of God, which is putting stumbling blocks in front of us and making us choose. When we come to these stumbling blocks, are we going to choose to do the right thing or choose to do the wrong thing because it satisfies our ego or some selfish desires that we have or whatever it is? So how does evil play a part in this world? What is its purpose?
Oh, yeah, that is a wonderful, wonderful question. First of all, the word I think that you were groping for is olam, is the world. God hides himself in the world, and the Hebrew word olam is written with the letters ayin, vav, lam, and mem, and is exactly the same root as meaning hidden. So the world itself hides God. And you're absolutely correct. The purpose of the hiding that God hides from us is to enable us to come to him freely with our free choice. Because if we were actually to see the goodness of God, we'd be in so much bliss the whole time that we'd automatically choose the positive. We would be like babies being, you know, fed the whole time. We would not be grown ups being able to choose from our own consciousness, from our own self, whether we want to serve God, whether we want to be together with God or not. And so this hiding of God is necessary to enable free choice to arise. Now, we mentioned earlier the whole idea of separating from God, that the ego, if the ego takes just for itself alone, this is separation. And this is the very beginning of what Rabbi Ashlag calls the framework of evil. If it's just one person taking for himself alone, that's one thing. But just imagine a whole population where everybody takes for themselves alone. And I'm sorry to tell you, but that's actually probably what we've got. That's the default consciousness of the world. It's everybody thinking, I have to act for myself, I have to act for my self-interests. And then it becomes not just an individual people, it becomes whole systems of economics, where people just, the whole economics is there to make the rich richer and the poor poorer, and this becomes the framework of evil. And people, of course, get very seduced by this and plug into it. And its presence is partly is created by all the individual people who are doing this, and they create systems of thought around it. But again, it's like you said, it also provides the choice. So when a person wakes up and says, I don't want to be part of this, this is not who I want to be, and then he makes that choice. And I must tell you a wonderful story. There was a journalist came to Tzfat this summer, who's been a journalist on, I think it's National Public Radio or something, in America. And he was being a journalist all over the world, and he suddenly realized that he was acting as part of this whole framework of unhappiness, of increasing the unhappiness in the world. And he realized this is not what he wanted to do. And so he stopped, and he wrote a book called The Geography of Happiness, or Geography of Bliss. And he went around and he investigated how how to make people happy, how are people happy? And I think this is just a wonderful example of somebody who was realized he was part of a framework of evil, of increasing unhappiness, and he said, no, this is not what I want to do, took his free choice in his hands, and changed direction. And we can all do that. But that framework is built, is made up, actually, of everybody.
As you were talking about before, that God hides himself in this world so we can have an illusion that where free will can exist. We learn that when the soul goes up to, you know, the next world, what we call the world of truth, where it's the shadows and are gone, and we can see the truth and the oneness of God, the soul doesn't want to have sinned. You know, our souls, if they went up to heaven and we saw our lives, you know, as we lived them, we would say, oh, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. We don't really want to sin. And to make these mistakes and go off the path that we're supposed to be walking down in our lives. But this world of truth is hidden from our eyes. And I tell people, when God put our soul in our bodies in a physical entity, and we only have these two small little organs in the top of our head called eyes that see things and perceive each other as, oh, Yedida is a separate being from Tamar Yona, which is a separate being from Joe Cohen, which is a separate being from Harvey, you know, or whatever. We all see ourselves as separate beings, and therefore we are in competition with each other. We have to take advantage of each other in order that we should get, if we were in the world of truth, we would all understand that we're all connected to God. Therefore, we're all part of each other, and it doesn't make sense for one part of the body to hurt another part of the body. And we would be able to see that truth and live it much better. So your book talks about, let me just go through some of the chapters so people can get an idea of this introduction to Kabbalah, to Jewish mysticism. And the book, again, is called A Tapestry for the Soul, The Introduction to the Zohar by Rabbi Yehuda Lev Ashlag. It's translated by you, and his teachings are compiled by you, but you are not in this book, essentially. Mm-hmm. Can people use this book and study alone, or do they have to have a teacher?
Well, it's really designed for a person to be able to go through and work through it themselves, if that's good for them. There's many ways you can use this book. Some people like to just read it themselves and study it themselves. And I've put in, one of the things I did put in was a few ideas for journal work, how a person can look at the ideas in it and discuss them with their journal. Other people prefer to study in a chevruta, that's a pair. Other people prefer study groups. Lots and lots of different ways. It's very versatile. We've got actually a few study groups have already started using this book, and they're very successful. So there's lots and lots of different ways.
Are any of these groups online where people can join in and learn from a teacher?
I actually do some teaching online, yes, and we want to increase that. I find Skype, I have to say, absolutely wonderful. I like the new technologies. It means that I can teach people who are widely geographically distant from each other, and we can definitely, and we do make groups online.
Okay, why don't you give out then information? Nahora Press is your website. Do you want people to email you?
Of course.
To find out if they want to join your classes?
Yes. Please go to the website. It's www.nehorapress.com. That's NEHORAPRESS.com. You can email me there. You can look at the website and see what's on it. There's lots of information. And I've been developing the website as a resource for the work of Rabbi Ashlag, putting up other articles that he's written, translating articles written by his son, Rabbi Boch Ashlag, who especially dealt with how to put the theoretical work of the Kabbalah into practice in our daily lives. And I like also to give little 10-minute talks of different things that come to me, which touch me, or a question that's arisen in one of the shiurim, or one of somebody's asked something or pointed out something, and I've thought about it and just made a little 10-minute little talk about it, and you can click on those and listen to those. Okay. As well.
I just want to say here for anybody who's worried, because, you know, we are religious Jews, all of us, this is not any teachings of secrets of Kabbalah. This is just introduction to Kabbalah in order to improve our lives on a basic level. So let's just go. We only have like a minute left to the show. Let's just very quickly go through some of the lessons. You have 18 lessons in your book, and it starts out with questions on the nature of God. Lesson two is inquiries into the nature of creation. Lesson three is the ultimate aim and purpose of creation. Lesson four, the substance of creation, the essence of the souls, affinity and difference of form. Lesson five, which I liked, the nature of evil, the different routes that body and soul travel, etc., etc. Lesson six is the states in which the soul exists simultaneously. In other words, free will. And that's also another interesting chapter. Lesson seven, the true nature of the body and its purpose and the end of suffering. Where am I acting from? And you have 18 lessons in here. I'm not going to go through all of them, but it's, again, this is the work of not you, but of Rabbi Yehuda Lev Ashlag, which you've translated. So it's pure form. And it's a very good book for an introduction to Kabbalah, to Jewish mysticism, to understand why are we put on this earth? Why did God create us? What does God want from us? And one of the messages in this book is to find joy in this world that he's given us and to serve God. Thank you so, so much for being with us, Yedidah Cohen.
Thank you all very, very much. It's been a real pleasure.